This is Classic Business with Michael Avery on Classic 102.7 in Gauteng and Fine Music Radio in Cape Town.
Well, much of the research in South Africa shows that SMEs fail not due to insufficient capital, but largely due to insufficient business know-how and access to markets. At its heart, enterprise and supply development is about leveraging procurement spend to help promote skills and development and job creation, and is very high on the national agenda, but often we see it fizzle out when it comes to operationalizing enterprise and supply development at the corporate level. So tonight we're going to discuss what businesses should be doing in order to effectively assist companies and the economy as a whole to ensure that we grow while providing the necessary skills transfer and helping to achieve sustainably the sort of employment and job creation that we so desperately need. And there was a very interesting research report conducted by StratEcon, and it's a development impact report, and it found that businesses on the two-year Property Point Accelerator program had recorded a cumulative contribution of 1.58 billion to the GDP since 2008. So just over 1.5 billion, just under 1.6, depending on how you cut it. It also found that the businesses created 2,244 direct and indirect jobs full-time here, and reported average revenue growth of 39%. Very impressive numbers in an economy that has been almost X growth over the last decade. So how did they do it? We've invited the founder and head of Property Point, Sean Tiernison, and two of the SMEs profiled and featured in the report as case studies, Tuso Kobayatu, who's a director for TSK Interiors, and Mpo Sono, who's a managing member of TMT Cleaning and Hygiene, to come and share what they've learned about successfully applying this form of business acceleration in South Africa. Sean, and to the panelists, welcome. But Sean, kick us off. Property Point is actually celebrating its 10th anniversary. How has it evolved over the last 10 years?
Hi, Michael. Good evening, and good evening to the listeners. I think one of the key factors for us over the past 10 years was when we initially started, we wanted to focus around how do we create and build a bridge for small and growing businesses into the formal economy. Over the years, what we've been able to really streamline is to take a very strong market-driven approach, a demand-led approach, meaning that we typically work with supply chain owners, with corporates up front, and start understanding what the market opportunities are for small and growing businesses before we go out and work with businesses. So before we go and incubate or accelerate a business, we get a sense of what the market is looking for and how we are able to effectively support business to fit into those opportunities in the marketplace. One of the key factors for us has also been if we are going to focus on supporting small businesses, we need to derive an impact. And that impact for us in economies like South Africa is inclusive growth as well as job creation. So those are two of the factors that we wanted to ensure that we focus on. So when we commissioned this macroeconomic study, we wanted to also elevate the conversation and just not look at, you know, whether an enterprise and supply development program has been effective, but whether it's actually contributing to the South African economy. Because I think there's a lot of programs out there, corporates are spending money in terms of enterprise and supply development and BEE, but there needs to be more accountability around the impact of the programs. And this is one of the key factors for us is we wanted to see what is that contribution being back to the South African economy. If the theory says we need to support small businesses, that's going to be the drivers of growth for the country.
It's a common critique from small businesses that go through these programs, maybe a 12-month or a 24-month program, that it's a great learning experience, great networking, but at the end of the 12 or 24 months, there's no offtake agreement. There's no real economic impact at the end of the day, and that's really what you're measuring here. How did you measure impact primarily?
Yeah, so from the macroeconomic study, we wanted to look at contribution back to the economy. One of the primary indicators for us was GDP. So what are businesses contributing back to the GDP in terms of the work that they've been able to generate through their firms, in terms of the growth that they've been able to focus on? Secondly, was looking at market access. And market access for us has been, are we able to develop small businesses that are becoming competitive that are able to compete in the marketplace and win those opportunities. So when we're speaking about the 1.1 billion worth of market access, we're speaking about contracts that have been won by small businesses that have come through the program. So it's conversion of those contracts, money in the bank, as we like to say. Then the other component for us was to say, okay, let's look at the effectiveness of the small businesses as well. So we looked at it at a firm level or at a small business level. How have they been growing? So one of the factors that we looked at in the study, in the more detailed report, which is available on our Property Point website, was to say, in the 10 years, what has been, if the economic growth rate was not been that great, you know, what are some of the factors that have been that's the reason for the growth? And because the businesses, we were able to do a control group study with businesses that did not go through Property Point and businesses on Property Point, and because the only differentiating factor was the fact that they were on our program. As you mentioned, those businesses were average revenue growth rate after 2 years was about 39%. But what we also looked at closely was 1 year the program. So as they were in the program, we had an average revenue growth of 78%, which is substantial in all means. But it's because I think as a Property Point program, we focused on understanding what the market is looking for and preparing these businesses to compete effectively in the market. Both these case studies this evening, both Mpo from TMT and Tuso from TSK, are examples of being able to go into the private sector space and compete effectively against their peers. And these are the larger peers that they were competing against and win those opportunities in terms of the contracts. And they had to tell their own story and not necessarily us telling their story. But I think that the process of being associated and working with the Property Point was a differentiating factor.
And we'll circle back to how you particularly at Property Point approach this, because I know some corporates, you develop a particular supplier and you almost feel you want to have exclusivity with that supplier, but those suppliers should be free to go and supply services to your competitors if they want to. But Mpoh, there's a nice little segue into your story. You completed your bachelor's in environmental health management back in 2001, and you went from being an unemployed graduate to an MD of your own company. Phenomenal story. Where did the entrepreneurial journey begin for you?
You know, initially it was quite frustrating. I think having been raised by two entrepreneurial, you know, parents in the form of a mother and a grandmother, it was always kind of within me. But I think it was the natural progress of movement from not having found work, you know, having graduated and ready for the industry, that I had no choice but to make it work. And I think in hindsight, it's been quite a blessing in a sense, because one has grown in such leaps and bounds. But really, this business was birthed out of a frustration. And I thought, what is the low-lying fruit that one can access? And I heard of an opportunity within Eskom. They were looking for Black women in the cleaning industry. And I think at the time, one thought that the cleaning industry was just about a bucket and a mop, and only to find out that there was an exact science and a whole industry behind it. But I think those were, you know, the initial steps that we grew from.
And now you're looking at facilities management companies like Bidvest and saying, oh, that's how they started out. Now, when you entered the program, what were you looking for? And how has this Property Point program shifted or changed your business and your perception or perspective of business?
So initially when I went in, I thought with my 38 cleaners and my 3 million turnover, that I was thinking I was ready for the private sector. And I remember walking into Woodmead Mall and saying, I want to clean this mall, I can do it. And little did I realize after receiving the RFP that we were not ready. I think Property Point was a blessing for us in terms of realigning, restructuring us, in terms of learning how to run a proper business, in terms of helping to establish our foundations, getting the in-house and back of house sorted, the legalities to be able to still produce an RFP and be considered. I think the beauty of it was that it was mentorship and coaching with industry specific related leaders who they kind of probably forced them to kind of take us on board to say, you know, walk with her, show her, how do you cost, how do you benchmark? And I think the intervention of Property Point has been a significant contributor to our success, no doubt.
Fantastic story. And if you look at it, your growth rates over the past few years, you've grown by 20%. You now employ 390 workers, most of whom are women, in an economy, lest we forget, that has barely managed to grow at 1%. So well done. Tuso,
awesome.
You quit your previous job as a property broker along with your partner to venture into construction services and management. And I know it's construction services, but what attracted you and what made you leave the cushy corporate life to go into the construction sector at a time when it really was in the doldrums? I mean, that's sheer bravery or stupidity. I don't know.
Evening, Michael. We were property brokers and we wanted to get into the development space and we just didn't have a balance sheet. So we flipped a coin and we said, okay, we're going to resign. We resigned and we decided we're going to service customers that we previously worked with. So we went into services with a 10-year plan to build up a balance sheet and then another 10 to 20-year plan to get back into the market that we really wanted to get into. So it was very stupid at the time. We made a lot of mistakes, but we're still here 10 years later.
And with a bold vision, with a 30-year vision by the sounds of things, yeah. What were the initial perhaps misconceptions that you had at the time when you decided to embark on an entrepreneurial journey that was very quickly the scales were sort of dusted from your eyes and you realized, wait a minute. Yeah.
So you work for a corporate, you deal in big transactions, you meet people, you know, you kind of get the impression that you are on that level. You leave corporate, now you are an individual and an entrepreneur with zero experience and zero backing. So you are not ready to enter certain markets that you thought you were ready to enter. And that's where we then decided to start very, very small. And we had to grow from crumbs to picking up bigger pieces of food at a later stage. And that's where we bumped into Sean. And Sean quickly taught us to just hold on the brakes, guys. You first need to get compliant and procurement ready. And yeah, we joined the program 2012. They brought us all the specialists to help us. And I think one thing to just as a advice to other entrepreneurs, just be patient with yourself and actually listen to the program. And take time, because the biggest problem was as entrepreneurs, we're so busy and we constantly have problems that to go and sit in a meeting with mentors and program guys, it takes too much out of your time. Focused, and I learned and I built capacity as an entrepreneur. And we learned, and in 2 years' time, we actually graduated as the top performing company on the program. And hence why we're still ambassadors, because it got us to where we were. Oh, no.
And that's such a valuable lesson. Very often when you chat to guys in the VC industry, they say they'll find great entrepreneurs, great jockeys, but do they have the scaffolding to scale that business? Do they have the systems and the processes? And that speaks to, you know, what you've done, build slowly and ensure that foundation is there. Sean, what did you really like about Important Tuso's stories?
So I think that one of the key themes that runs throughout our process, and this is part of our selection, is that we do select for the right attitude. And both these entrepreneurs have a level of tenacity. When there's a video that Mpo did for us, and she speaks about when the chips are down, you know, you just have to kind of keep soldiering on. Yeah. And I think that that's what we saw within these entrepreneurs. Both of their businesses were at fledgling stages when we initially engaged with them on the program. But it's the ability to invest in your own business, the ability to have accountability for your business, and the ability to open up your business for others to come in and provide support was key. So they were teachable. They were willing to go the hard course. They were open to the external advice. And they were putting in the hard work. One of the key factors and lessons learned for us at Property Point is there needs to be accountability. And that accountability, even for the financial investment that we make into the business, is their ability to work on their own business, as opposed to us spoon-feeding the process. So we hard task masters, but our businesses that we select are harder workers. And that's, I think, the example in both these businesses this evening as well.
And Paul, it sounds like Sean really cracked the whip with you guys, but it's the only way to succeed in this world. If you look at, there's a rugby analogy of, you know, why the All Blacks are the best team. Where, with all due respect to the Springboks, they've been number one in the world for far longer than we have. It's a work ethic and a hunger for success. Hopefully, we're starting to see that come back under Rossi's leadership. But what would you put down as your key attributes that have helped you rise above so many others who are hustling on this entrepreneurial journey?
I think the perseverance and the tenacity of just not giving yourself the option to give up. I think that is part and parcel of the program's learning, in the sense that self-leadership is the most important to be able to lead others. You got to take responsibility, as Sean said. And I think the key learning is that you learn to be self-reliant. And yes, you're on a program only to learn and mentor and coach, but you really have to go back there and enact and put into place everything that you have been taught, and go and look for new customers. And there's that beauty of, you always have them as a backup. And but you really have to go out there and sell yourself and make it work.
And Suso, I know the one refrain I get often from businesses in enterprise and supply development programs is breaking the networks that have been established over many years of corporate procurements and relationships that are built up. And yes, it's about low cost, but it's also a relationship that you've built with a particular supplier. Now you've got to go and open that door to a new supplier. How difficult have you found that in building your business?
So we in the private sector, and you know, the biggest challenge in private sector is it's all relationships. People buy from people. So you need to just get into there and, you know, humble yourself and start with a relationship with the suppliers. And don't take on too many people. Take on a few good clients and build a relationship of trust. Once you have that, then you know, you are the solution. They constantly come back to you and you grow with them. The biggest thing is to grow with your customers, you know. That's very, very important.
Sean, for any small or medium-sized business out there thinking of developing their own enterprise and supply development program, probably more medium-sized business, what's the key lesson and learning that you can share from Property Point?
I think our biggest lesson is that get the right partners on board. So Property Point was initiated initially by Growth Point, and through the years we were able to bring on board other corporate partners as funders. So collaboration and partnerships are key. And making sure that what you are offering businesses in terms of the support is value. Is your value proposition? We're not selling BEE points. We're selling value in growing businesses, and we want to see impact. And ultimately, over a 10-year period, Property Point has shown that it has delivered impact.
And that reframes the conversation entirely. How do we create impact? How do we scale businesses? How do we grow them? And really, the business incubator model that you've demonstrated, $1.5 billion to GDP over that period, just phenomenal. Sean, thank you so much for your time. Mpo Sono and Tuso Kobayatao, I think I butchered your surname in the beginning, Director of TSK Interiors, and Mpo Sono, Managing Member of TMD Cleaning and Hygiene. Thanks so much for sharing your stories. That's a wrap from the team tonight. My thanks to sound engineer Matabataba Radebe, Andres Mashlangu doing all the production work. I think Sylvia A is in the Jazz Lounge in Cape Town tonight, and in Gauteng, Carolyn Stein up next with the smoothest classics on Winding Down. Good night.